see it anymore, but I don't come very often. And it's a beautiful road. That it looked beautiful this morning, and then as the sea comes into view, it was a lovely scene. So it's a good place to be this morning. The theme I chose for this morning, it came very clearly to me as I was praying, that we would look at this passage from Isaiah, and I want to link it with, I think, the picture that's going to come up. God is a divine weaver. So we're talking today from Isaiah, that great prophet. He's a very long prophet, isn't he? 66 chapters or so many chapters there are. God's special representative on the earth that was along with the other prophets that were inaugurated by Samuel. And they had the unenviable task of telling people God's truths, God's word, leading them, correcting them, and rebuking them often, but also reminding them of the wonderful promises that God has. So there's, I think, 66 chapters in Isaiah. The first 39 are scathing denunciations of the prophets. You'll be pleased that I haven't chosen a passage from the first 39 chapters. 40 to 66 are a bit more encouraging, full of consolation, full of hope, full of promises for the future that are still future for us too. So today there's a message here just of some element of warning or maybe a reality check, which we all do need sometimes, and then wonderful hope. And my goodness, at every stage of life we need hope, don't we? We need people to remind us that there is a bright future, because as you look out, it's not looking too good at the moment. And that's true for us as nations, as the world, as churches. Bit of a struggle. Churches are weird and wonderful places. I know I've been in them all my life. And then as individuals, as we continue to navigate through a troubled world. So I pray that this word will encourage us this morning. It's encouraged me as I've prepared it, so I hope it does the same for you. And that God uses it to correct us, to inspire us, to rebuke us, and to teach us his ways. So God is a divine weaver. On this next picture, you're going to see a picture of my old mum. And actually, Maria here, you will know my mum. Isn't that amazing? Maria actually knows my mum. None of the rest of you do, but I thought I'd put a picture up there, because I hope most of us can say we've had the best mum in the world. I hope that's true for many of us here. So I've had the best mum in the world, but I hope you can say that if you can. But my mother was a lovely old lady. Well, she was old when she died. She died at 86, I think she was. But she was a lovely mother. And she was a good mum. She was a bit of a poet. She liked writing poems. And I've got a few of her poems that are precious to me. I haven't got anything else but her poems. And she used to try and teach me. I think she could see I was going to be a wayward child without some correction, which was true. And she used to have all different sayings. So I remember her saying to me, "Tall oaks from little acorns grow." And she was right, and I have kind of learned that over the years. I have got some money saved up for a rainy day. But this was one of her favourites, and it's going to come up on the next screen, a poem. Some of you will know this poem. Corrie ten Boom, if you know Corrie ten Boom, she used this poem a lot. I don't think she wrote it, but she used it a lot in her speaking. And this my mum taught me. "My life is but a weaving between my God and me. I cannot choose the colours. He weaveth steadily. Oft times he weaveth sorrow, and I in foolish pride forget he sees the upper and I the underside. Not till the loom is silent and the shuttle cease to fly will God unroll the canvas and reveal the reason why. The dark threads are as needful in the weaver's skillful hand as the threads of gold and silver in the pattern he has planned. He knows, he loves, he cares. Nothing this truth can dim. He gives the very best to those who leave the choice to him." Dear old mum. At the time I thought, well, that's quaint. But actually I have reflected even very recently on what she tried to teach me in those days. As a very young person, trying to work out how, God, are you going to weave anything out of this kind of crazy life that I am, the crazy sort of person that I am. Then as I got older, and like all of you here, experienced the difficult times of life. I'm sure you've all done that. I don't think anyone's got through life unscathed. You will have had your difficulties. I had plenty of those. Lots of times when I was left feeling, "God, where are you in all of this? When everything seemed to be a bit of a mess. As I got older, in all of life's adventures, because there are good times in our lives, we were just reminiscing on that. And especially I used to go to Nagaland. I think the first picture we saw, that was a weaver of a girl from Nagaland. No one ever knows where Nagaland is. It's in northeast India, near Burma. And we've been there maybe 10 times, and possibly 40 people have been right in the jungle of Nagaland, watching these people weaving. And somehow that weaved into many lives some very precious experiences of God right out in the middle of the jungle. You think, this is weird. What are we doing here? This is crazy. It all seems a bit of a mess. And then recently, in the last year has been very exciting for me because I retired. I expect many of you have retired. Not all of you have. You're not old enough yet. But retirement's great as far as I'm concerned. But I didn't want to retire just from being, I was the pastor of the church in Southwick, just down the road from here, but I wanted to do something, you know, worthwhile. And God has become a great master weaver at that, because somehow he has managed to weave together all the things that I really enjoy. So he weaves together, bringing different strands. I'm passionate about sport. I love football, I love cricket, I love all sorts of sports. I wanted to be a sports teacher, but God had other plans. But now, sport has weaved into it. I'm passionate about world travel, and I do travel the world. I still lead trips to Israel. If anyone wants to come to Israel, you can come in November, but we're taking a trip in Israel. I go to Zimbabwe, go to Spain, where we run a church in Benidorm. So they're all sort of different places to travel to. So God has kept that as part of my life. And then he's weaved in caring for older people. That's my passion. I'm not very good at children's work. I'm single. I haven't had my own children. But I love older people. And somehow I think God loves older people. So I'm something called an Anna Chaplin. And going into care homes. So God is a weaver even now, and I wouldn't be standing here today if I hadn't been a steward at Brighton Hove Albion Football Club, where I met Jane and Rob. Now, I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for them, so if you want to blame them, they're responsible. But, you know, it's a great mission field, football, and as you said about the man on the bus, before I go to football on a Saturday to steward, I pray for God to give me an opportunity to talk to someone. And it's happened again and again and again. One time we were out on the terraces and one of the cleaners came up to me, and somehow we got onto God, I don't know why, and we were chatting about God, and suddenly Brighton scored a goal and it was erupting in the stadium, and we looked and said, oh, well, this is far more important to talk about. So we carried on talking about God. So it's crazy. Another time I was there and I prayed for an opportunity and not one had come during that afternoon. And just as we were shutting up Donatello's, a man was sitting there, a man and his wife were sitting there with two kids, and I sidled over them and sat down, and he opened up all about he'd been invited to an alpha course, and what was an alpha course? And so I'm thinking, God, you are amazing. So somehow, and I love talking to people who are not believers yet, so somehow God, the divine weaver, has put it all together. But let's now link this image to what Isaiah says. I think there's a verse coming up, which is verses 6 to 7. There is that mess, because sometimes life is a mess, isn't it? You can't work out what is God doing, you know, around the world. Or sometimes I've gone through times thinking, what are you doing, God? I can't understand this at all. It all looks like the underside of the tapestry. It's a mess, and we can't make head nor tail of it. The scripture, though, that's coming up next, it says this. Oh, yeah, before that, maybe I didn't put this one in. Sorry, it says, seek the Lord while he may be found. I haven't got that one on there. Well, this passage in Isaiah, verses 6 and 7, started with, seek the Lord while he may be found. Call on him while he's near. Let the wicked forsake their ways and the unrighteous their thoughts. Let them turn to the Lord, and he will have mercy on them, and to our God, for he will freely pardon. Now, I guess most of us, if not all of us here this morning, have already done that. We have already, at some stage in our life, sought after God. We've searched for him, and we've turned away from life without him, hopefully, and are getting through his life with him. And I'm always fascinated by people's stories of how they came to faith. If we had time, I'd love to hear everybody's story, because God is amazing how he, you know, gets to us, isn't it? All in different ways, in different places. Sometimes, as it says there about seeking, sometimes it's a bit torturous. It's not always easy to come to faith. It's not all plain sailing. But I'm glad for me, I came to faith at the age of 14, and I'm glad because it's given me, God, a lot of time to work on me. He needed to do a lot of work to sort me out and save me from a lot of pitfalls in life. So, but over life, I have to say, I've had the joy of helping quite a few other people come to faith and begin their journey. And there's always the temptation when someone comes to faith to tell them, oh, when you become a Christian, everything's going to be great. It's all going to be fantastic. It's going to be one glorious climb to heaven. But you can't, can you? Because actually, that is not true. It's not true in my life. I'm pretty sure it's not true in your life. We all know that reality is that life isn't easy, even for those of us who are faithful followers after Jesus. And we've all experienced those messy times where the tapestry is a mess and you think, I don't know why this is happening to me, God. I don't know why. Why am I suffering? Why hasn't it worked out the way I thought it should work? Why isn't church life easier? You know, we're a group of Christians together. It should be dead easy. Why is it not easier, God? And as you prayed this morning, why is there so much suffering of Christians around the world? Why are there people today sitting in prisons just because they're believers? God, I don't get this. I think it's all a mess. If I was God, it wouldn't be like that. We kind of think in those terms. But this is where Isaiah shed some light on it this morning. And this is the reality check, I think it is, or the truth. You know this verse, I'm sure. For my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, declares the Lord. As the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts your thoughts. So what does this tell us? Well, it tells us God doesn't think how you think and I think. We don't think on the same level often. God doesn't always do things the way you think he should or I think he should. He's not under my control. He's not under your control. Although secretly, I wish he was. I want things to be done my way. But that's not the Christian life, is it? We have to be under his lordship and authority. He doesn't have to come under ours. Now, there are always verses in the Bible that I think about them and think, am I glad these verses are there, or would I prefer to erase them? This is one of these verses. Because a bit of me thinks, I don't like this verse, because most of us actually do like to be in control, don't we? Most of us like to understand everything, to be able to get it all neatly in place. If we're in control of it, then we can manage it. I'm like that anyway. I kind of like to be in control, because it helps us cope better. And we really actually do want God to do things our way a lot of the time. It's more comfortable. And then when the truth dawns that he doesn't actually always do what we want him to do, it can really rattle our cages and make life, even make us turn against God. So I can remember times in my life, back to that tapestry, where it's looked like that. Can any of you remember that? When it all looked such a mess. I'm thinking, how does that all fit together? Times when I couldn't understand why God had or hadn't done things. I remember a time when a lady we prayed for died, and I was very angry with God about that. How dare you let her die? You know, she's got small children and all that. Felt very angry, blamed him. Stopped talking to him, sent him to Coventry. Don't know why Coventry gets such bad press, but whatever. When something failed, something didn't work out, you know, and you're left feeling, God, you didn't turn up, so I'm not very happy with you. Have you ever felt like that? I hope I'm not the only one in this room. I hope there are others who actually have struggled to understand God's mysterious ways sometimes. But I think over the years, I have maybe come to accept this scripture more and more and more, not just as a text, but as an experience of life. Because it's not just what Isaiah says. There are plenty of other scriptures that remind us that God is a mysterious God. I think another one's coming up. Here are a few scriptures I found. Should we accept only good from God and not adversity? That was from Job. Well, you know what happened to Job. He had to navigate all that stuff of why is life such a mess, you know, and come out trusting God. In this world, you will have trouble. This is another verse I would prefer not to be there. In this world, you'll have blessing, but sometimes, no, it's trouble, as those sitting in a prison cell will be thinking today. But be of good cheer. I have overcome the world. So thank God that bit's there. And this last one, he causes the sun to rise on the evil and the good. I think, oh, well, that's not fair. Just put it on the good people. Don't put it on the evil ones. But somehow, that's his choice. And he sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. So these are scriptures we have to come to terms with in our lives, not just as a text, but as a real feature of life. That when my life doesn't go the way I think it should, what do I do? And I think over the years, I think by this stage of life, I think I probably understand God less than I ever have done in the past. When I was young, I used to thought, oh, great, got it all sussed out. As you get older, you realise, no, I haven't got it all sussed out. I think I understand him less, but I do love him more and I trust him more, which is weird, but I think that's where I've come to in my life. And I do accept now, God, you've got your own ways of doing things. You're not accountable to me. You have the right to do anything you want to do. You don't have to run it past me first, and your ways are not my ways. And that does sometimes leave us pondering and wondering, but I'm sure you're the same as me. So we have to accept a reality check. God is not under my control, your control. He doesn't have to act in the ways that I tell him to because he is God. Now, going back to the Isaiah passage, it does remind us that his ways are... Sorry, back to the other one. Yeah, his ways are higher. Yeah. So that my ways are higher. So they're not just higher, they are superior. God's way of thinking is far, far superior to even the brainiest person. I was at cricket on Friday for 9 hours, and I found a lovely old man there, a 91-year-old man, a very clever man. He was a forensic scientist. I thought, oh, you know. But we had a lovely time. And he's a very intelligent man, but nothing compared to God. However intelligent any of us might be this morning, God is much, much superior. His ways are higher than as the earth is from the heavens. Well, that's boundless. I mean, I love astronomy. When I look up into the night sky, oh, God, you're so much higher. You know, you are much, much superior to us. And I think now as I've got older, I'm very grateful, and I hope you are this morning, that he's much bigger than any human being, because that's our only hope. If man really is the measure of all things, if we're the top of the pile and there's nothing higher than a human brain, we are in trouble. We are sunk. So for me now, it's a wonderful thing. I love not understanding God, because that means he's bigger than I am. If we can understand everything about him, we wouldn't have done what we did this morning, is worship him. And we can look up, because you're thinking, God, you're so much bigger than us here. You're so much greater. You're so much higher. You're superior. I understand a lot about you, God, but I don't understand everything. And I'm really pleased, because then I can worship you and I can honor you. And I can know that there is hope for the world because he is higher and greater. And we're not in the hands of Putins or Sunaks or Trumps or anybody. God is going to control. So I hope you enjoy worship, because worship reminds us, God, you are higher and greater. You're not a human being like us. You are bigger and you are greater. And it also reminds us, I think this goes on to the next verses, Bob, thank you. He promises here that he knows exactly what he is doing. Everything's on track as far as God's concerned. So when we get up in the morning and there's another bit of bad news, you're like, oh, God says, don't worry. I've got it all. I know what I'm doing. You don't understand it. Don't even try, but God does. He knows exactly what he's doing. For as the rain and the snow come down from heaven, well, we've had a bit too much of that. And I don't know if you saw on the television this morning, Germany, they've had massive hailstones. And it's like snow in Germany. It's ridiculous, isn't it? We've had a bit too much rain, but if you're in Israel, the rain is very precious because it's few and far between. And you know if you don't get rain, you're not going to eat because there's going to be no crops. So all the imagery of rain is a blessing in the scriptures. It may not be to us here in August in West Sussex, but today is a better day. So as the rain and the snow come down from heaven and don't return to it, but water the earth, so shall my word that goes out, for it shall not return empty. Hear that, it's God's way is going to happen. There's no way he's not going to get his way. His authority, his rule, his kingship will happen in your life, in the life of the church, in the life of the world. Ultimately, he knows exactly what he is doing, and therefore we can trust him. So Isaiah is very clear about it here. His purposes will be fulfilled. End of story. Full stop. Relax, enjoy that, know that that is the truth. And it reminds us too that his plans, they're good. They're like life-giving rain. Now, when you're seeing the underside of your tapestry, it doesn't look like that. But he knows he's getting us there. We're going to experience life-refreshing rain, and it'll be a blessing. So the question is, do we believe these verses? I don't know if you believe them or not. I don't know any of you here, really. Maria, I don't know even you. I know you only know us every time we meet at football and enthuse about football. But are we willing to believe these? Don't have to. It's your choice. But if we stand in faith that God will work things out, give him a bit of time and he really, really will. Because that's what he promises. If your tapestry looks a complete mess at the moment, just give him time. He knows what he's doing. He's getting it all sorted on the upper side. But it's going to require two things from us that we as Christians have to be good at. That's waiting. I'm not very good at waiting. I don't know if you're one that tries to dodge the queues in the supermarket and get in the shorter queue, and then you find someone else has gone in and they've got hundreds of things in their trolley. Oh, for goodness sake. I don't like waiting. I'm not a very patient person by nature. I want everything to happen now or tomorrow. So it's waiting and trusting. I think I've learned that over the years. I trust God more because he is trustworthy. But we have to learn this intentionally. It doesn't come by osmosis. We have to say, God, I really am going to trust that somehow this mess you're weaving together in there. And that's what we've got here. Again, it's not just Isaiah who says this. It's other scriptures. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. And you notice that. Lean not on your own understanding because it won't get you there. Sometimes don't try and understand it. If some people come and ask me why, I think, oh no, I can't answer that question. I don't know why. I really don't know why. So it is a matter of trusting and not leaning on your own understanding. That won't get you very far. And be still in the presence of the Lord. Wait patiently. Again, that's something I've had to learn. You know, the disciples had to wait 3 days for the resurrection. The day after Jesus died, things looked pretty bad, didn't they? But with a bit of waiting, things turned around. And that's so often in Scripture. I just want to share one experience that I think I've learned it well from. Some of you might know about this, but about 5 years ago, I was preparing to go to our mission in Zimbabwe, and I went to Sainsbury's in West Hove, thinking this is a really safe place to go. There's nice people in Sainsbury's in West Hove. Stupidly, I should have taken someone else with me. It was all stupid. But anyway, I went to exchange my money, in £7,000 it was, into US dollars to take to Zimbabwe. And as I was coming out the shop, I didn't realise it, but someone brushed alongside me and stole the money out of my bag. And I got home and I could not believe it. I looked at it, I thought, where is it? And then suddenly the awful truth dawned that I had been robbed not of my money, that would have been bad enough, but this was charitable money. And I remember thinking at that moment, I am giving up. I'm not carrying, I can't do this anymore. It's too hard. I want to die. I literally nearly collapsed on the floor. And that was my evaluation of that experience at that moment. You know, it was the most horrible bit of black tapestry that I could possibly think of. So I managed to get myself together, and I had to obviously tell the other trustees of our charity what had happened. That was absolutely terrible. I felt totally stupid, you know, beat yourself up, shouldn't have done it, shouldn't have gone to West Hove. It's a terrible place, West Hove. But anyway, we had to go, and I gathered myself together. We managed to replace the money temporarily, and we took it out to Zimbabwe. But I was in a terrible state out there, and I was thinking, God, why did you let that happen? That's horrible, you know. You know, we're trying to do our best. I don't understand this. But God has his own ways of working things out, as we're talking about. So I remember normally when I go out there, I have a room on the front of our building, which looks out on the nice trees. But for some reason, they put me on the back of the building. I thought, well, that was another bad. Nothing was right. Anyway, but God knows what he's doing, because I looked out in the morning, and on the roof, which is I looked out on, there were always birds on the roof. And I started thinking, and this scripture came into my mind where Jesus said, don't worry about the birds. They don't worry about what they're going to eat and what they're going to drink. Don't worry, I know what you need. And that really did actually begin building a bit of faith in my spirit. Oh, maybe this is going to be okay. Don't know. So the week went on, and we did what we needed to do, gave them the £7,000. And then on the last day we were there, we went to a farm area where there's some wild animals, so we just went there for a bit of a break. And for some reason, the owner of the farm came up to us that day and said, oh, would you like me to show you around? And we said, well, yeah, if you want to, yeah. So he showed us around, and then he said, come and have a cup of tea. I'd like to tell you my story. So we sat there under the African sun, and he told his story of how he had been robbed of his farm. You know, if you know anything about Zimbabwe, under Mugabe, the farms were taken away from the white people and given to other people, etc., etc. Anyway, he said, but I want to tell you what happened, because God gave me back my farm. And it was all an accident, he said. He shouldn't really have got it back, but he did. He went away after it was taken, terribly distressed. He had to stay in a hotel. And while he was in that hotel, he just prayed and prayed and prayed to God. And then, cutting a long story short, at one point he was told to go to an office somewhere, and he was told that he could have his farm back. They later found it was a mistake. He shouldn't have been told that, but somehow he got told that, and he got given back his farm. Oh, that's amazing, isn't it? And that afternoon, as we sat under the African sun looking over the bush, I just knew that all this money would come back. Don't ask me how I knew, but it was faith. You know, faith had built inside me. And I thought, okay, let's see how this is going to happen. Anyway, got home, and cutting a very long story short, the day I got home, I think it was, a lady phoned me, a police officer. Some of you might know her, Caroline O'Connell. She lives in Port Slade. Anyway, she was the officer assigned to our case, and she's a Christian. And she said, we are going to get that money back. It's God's money, and it's not going to be stolen. We will get it back some way. And so, because of her, she did all sorts of things, which included me getting... I went on Crime Watch, you know, Crime Watch. I don't suppose any of you saw it, but I was on the BBC News, I was on ITV News, I was on... I mean, I hated it, because, you know, we had to do reconstruction. But I was thinking, this is so weird. God, what are you weaving together here? Anyway, in the end of all that, because of the publicity and all sorts of things, various different people started contributing money. And in the end, we got back not 7,000, but 8,000. Because somewhere it says in the Bible, you will get pressed down and overflowing. And I thought, God, that's amazing. Had you asked me on day one when that happened, I was giving up. There wasn't a God. He was horrible. You know, he'd let this happen. Wind on a while. I have to say, this is the biggest experience of God's miraculous powers I have ever experienced. And so what was the worst thing in my life eventually has become the best thing of seeing God at work. But it took time for that to work out. And it, It was wonderful how God gradually built faith inside me. And that is great. And that's where really this passage goes on to a very, very joyful experience of God's blessing. And it says his plans will be accomplished. Things won't be as bad as we think they are. He is working them out at different levels in our lives. And these are the wonderful things, the wonderful promises, aren't there? That God knows the plans he's got for us. They're not to finish us off and wreck our lives. They are to encourage us and bless us. You will know Jeremiah 29:11, I'm sure. Many are the plans of a person's heart, but it is God who directs their steps. So I'd like that money to have come back from the people who stole it from me. It didn't, but other people did. God did use other people. And that's the bit at the top that we've got here. And we come to the last part where Isaiah gives us such joyful hope. And whatever day of the week it is, you need joyful hope, don't you? Whether you're young, whether you're middle-aged, whether you're older, we always need hope. And here are these lovely verses at the end. You'll go out with joy. You'll be led forth in peace. The mountains and the hills will burst into song before you. The trees of the field will clap their hands. Instead of the thorn bush will grow the pine tree or the juniper. Instead of briars, the myrtle will grow. This will be for the Lord's renowned for an everlasting sign that will never, will endure forever. Wonderful imagery, isn't it? Full of joy, peace, victory, clapping, applause. It sounds a bit like Brighton and Hove Albion have just won. We work in the hospitality and we always hope that they win, because if they win, everyone comes down happy. If they don't win, everyone comes down miserable or ooh, and we have a harder time, you know, giving them a nice experience. But no, you know, it was exciting to be there when Brighton got into Europe, wasn't it? And we drew against Manchester City. I mean, if you're not a football fan, it won't make any sense. But it was very exciting for this community. But that's nothing compared to what this is talking about. Of course, it pales into complete insignificance. But Isaiah is looking forward to the time when God's salvation will grip the whole earth. There won't just be a few people like us bowing the knee. Everybody will. They'll bow the knee because they finally realise that Jesus is Saviour and Lord. And then, of course, at that time, that will include us. And that's the time when the tapestry will become clear. I think that's the next picture here. One day, you'll get to understand it all. Isn't that nice? You won't do it in your lifetime, probably, but one day, oh, that was why. Or maybe it won't even matter anymore. I don't know. But the time will come, not till the loom is silent and the shuttle ceases to fly, will God unroll the canvas and explain the reason why. The dark threads are as needful in the skillful weaver's hand as the threads of gold and silver in the pattern he has planned. I mean, I don't know if you believe that. I don't know. It could just be a quaint old verse. But that's really what Isaiah is saying. You know, we have the rough, we have the smooth, we have the blessing, we have the challenges at every level of life, the world, the church, and our own personal lives. But I believe this. I really believe this, that one day, oh, that's why it worked. Oh, that's why that happened. Oh, okay, yeah. Just give him time and trust him. So on a personal level, for each one of us as individual human beings, I wonder if you can just place the tapestry of your life afresh into God's hands today, saying, I don't get it, Lord. I don't know why such and such a thing is happening right now in my life, or why it hasn't happened or whatever. But I'm going to trust you. I'm going to place it in your hands, because that's the safest place to put it. On a church level, I don't know what's happening for you as a church. I left Southwick a year ago, and I thought, oh, they'll have a minister straight away. Not on your life. No minister in sight. And I'm thinking, that's weird. God, why didn't you send a minister along? I don't know how long you've been waiting. Have you been waiting?
Yes, over a year.
Over a year, yeah. We're in the same boat. And you do think, why, don't you? I think, no, I don't understand this. I had it all sussed out how it was going to happen. It didn't happen like that at all. God's God. He can do it his own way. So I guess at church level, we don't understand, but we have to keep surrendering it and saying, God, just give it to you. We'll wait. We'll do anything you tell us to do, but we'll trust and we'll wait. And you have got good plans. It's good. It wants a future and a hope. It's his church. It's not your church. He's far more interested in this church than you are because he's God and it's his body. So we have to surrender church life. And then on a world level, it's a terrible mess, isn't it? You know, it gets worse. There's Chad now, and then there's not enough television space to do all the trouble spots of the world. And it's terrible. What dreadful loss of life in Ukraine and Yemen and happening in Israel and China. And then climate change, whatever's happening there, you know, it's all a mess, isn't it? And it's going to need divine intervention. No one can sort it out. There's not a human being on this earth who could possibly sort out the mess. So let's encourage one another to await God's timing in things, to keep trusting him, to keep waiting for him, because he will work it all out. It's absolutely sure. And I can assure you it will all work out in the end. And so, I don't know about you, but the only time I really, well, the best time I've experienced God's presence in my life is when I surrender. It's not when I'm telling him what you ought to be doing, and you know, it's when I say, God, I just give it all to you. Because that acknowledges his lordship, isn't it? We surrender to someone who's bigger and greater and higher, and that's why he is. And if we can really surrender every bit, sometimes I do every bit of my life I can think of that I can't get my head around. Surrender to him, and then he gets to work and continues sorting things out. So we're just going to, in response, just sing that gently, I think it will be. If you can, I can't force anybody to do this, but if you can just surrender your own life, particularly the bits that are messy, the black threads at the moment in the church life, surrender this church to God. It's his. Surrender everything that's going on in the world, saying, God, be at work, because it's far too big. But if we can do that, then that's a good response to his word.